27, and once you have that marked, also turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, please. We're going to open with a verse from Paul's second letter to Corinth. But of course, our main text is Acts 27. Next to last class. Everybody gets a star for enduring. Especially, some of you have endured two quarters, so you get two stars. All right, let's begin with our Acts facts. And the list is just about complete with tonight's fact. I have too much stuff up here tonight. All right, chapter 1, ascension and appointment. Chapter 2, Pentecost and Peter's preaching. Chapter 3, lame man and lesson. Chapter 4, restraint, release, request. Chapter 5, deception and detention. Chapter 6, seven selected, the servants. Chapter 7, Stephen was stoned. Chapter 8, Samaritan salvation. Chapter 9, Saul's salvation, his trip to Damascus and his obedience, and then Dorcas being raised from the dead by Peter. Chapter 10, Cornelius was converted, first Gentile. Chapter 11, report and relief. Peter had to give a report. Chapter 12, persecution, Peter and pride. James the apostle slain, Peter was imprisoned, and then Herod met his doom by worms. Great story for the children. They love that. 13 and 14. And the reverse, of course, is true. I call him back to Antioch. All right, chapter 15. Disagreement and decision. The conference. Circumcision. Gentiles. Chapter 16. Philippian prison. Conversion of Lydia and the jailer. Chapter 17. Sermon on Mars Hill. Chapter 18. Something Antioch. Three A's. Achaia, which is where what city is? Corinth. So Achaia, then Antioch, the end of the third journey. And then who? Paul's has a short little role to play in this drama at the end of that chapter. All right, chapter 19. Rebaptism of the 12, the repentance, which was the burning of the books. Sorcery books. In what city again are we? Ephesus. And then the riot. They're in the theater because the artisans, namely Demetrius, took great offense to Paul preaching against idolatry. All right, chapter 20. Now Jen's not here, so you're going to have to man up here, or woman up, as the case may be. Two M's. Macedonia and Miletus. Paul meeting, I always think Paul meets the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20. So they met at Miletus. 21. We're getting thin here now. Two J words. Jerusalem. Paul is going to go back to Jerusalem. Remember, he was begged on more than one occasion, don't you go there. It's not going to go well for you. And he says, well, I'm going. So it was Jerusalem and then the Jewish mob. And the Jewish mob here is what's going to come into play. It starts a chain of events for these next few chapters. It isn't all in Jerusalem, but they were the first domino to fall to have all these events start happening. So chapter 22 is like 26 now, remember? Review and rejection. The Jewish people rejected Paul because he said what word? Dirty word, Gentiles. When he said that, then the whole place broke apart. All right. So 22 was review and rejection. And 23, two C words, counsel and conspiracy. Paul was brought in by Lysias, the commander, the centurion, if you will, to the Sanhedrin. He got to address them, and Paul perceived that they were made up of both Pharisees and Sadducees, and he divided the meeting with his statement. So, counsel and conspiracy. All right, chapter 24. two more C words. No, excuse me. Yes. I was right. I thought I was wrong. He was left in Caesarea in prison for 2 years by Felix, who gave way to Festus. Now, chapter 25. Yes, Agrippa comes on the scene and Paul makes his appeal to Caesar, which is sort of where we are or have been the last lesson or two. Then this past Sunday morning, chapter 26. It's like 22. Review and ridicule. And the ridicule comes into play from who? Who made fun of Paul? By saying, much learning has made thee mad. Paul, you're nuts. That story, I don't believe any of that. He just found it very unbelievable. So, so tonight's is marooned on Malta. Paul goes to, he's on his way to Rome, and he gets stuck on the island. All right, only one more to go. One more to go. I do want to encourage you, even if you're not teaching next quarter, just periodically review these. Keep them fresh in your mind. I didn't even write this. I think Tim had a lot to do with writing this list years ago. We've added it, tweaked it here or there. But if you just review it periodically, it does help retain. It really does help retain the basic content of each chapter of the book of Acts. And it makes you a better student. You're able to understand the story really, really well. All right. So let's look now. I have just a few charts to show before we look at some maps. I'm really going to teach tonight from a map, and I'll explain why just in a moment. So the time for Paul to go to Rome is here. We've had a lot's happened since Jesus made this statement back to Paul in chapter 23 when he told him, you're going to be witness for me at Rome. So you're going to go. So that's been, a lot's happened since then, and now the time has come. He's going, and primarily he's going because nothing more can be done for him in Caesarea. Because why? Well, he made this appeal, and that sort of ends all political activity in terms of the governor and the capital there at Caesarea, the provincial capital. Paul's, he's on his way, and that's where he's going to go. So it's late in the year, and we know that because in 27, and we're skipping ahead just for a moment, in verse 12, Luke mentions that they were going to spend the winter on Crete. So it is late in the year. And typically what happens with open sea sailing late in the year? It's not feasible. Professional sailors knew. You don't go out on the high seas in the winter months. It's just not safe. So it's late in the year. And the journey is not going to be an easy one. And Luke, of course, adds a lot of detail in this chapter. Obviously, Paul gets shipwrecked on Malta. That's evidence that it was not going to be an easy journey. And here's a verse I want to start at. 2 Corinthians 11. Turn your Bibles there. Sometimes we don't remember that this shipwreck on Malta was not Paul's first. We may think it is, but it's not. By this time, he's already written 2 Corinthians. That was back in chapter 20. On toward the tail end of the third journey. And we're going to jump in at verse 23. This is Paul sort of, some might say, well, Paul's bragging. No, Paul's defending his apostleship against false teachers, false Judaizing accusers who spoke ill of him when he was not there to defend himself in Corinth. So basically he says in verse 23, excuse me, of Christ, I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 lashes or stripes, minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Where did that happen? We have no idea. We know Paul's been traveling. We know that because of the journeys. And obviously, he had traveled on the seas. He had sailed on ships. But the Holy Spirit didn't see any reason, didn't see fit to include these other shipwreck times in the chronicle that Luke has been authoring. A night and a day I spent in the deep. So Paul's been in it, and he's really been through it. So I just want us to be aware of the fact that this shipwreck on Malta, we have great detail of this occurrence happening. Very vivid description Luke gives us in this chapter. This wasn't Paul's first shipwreck. He had been without a boat three other times. In deaths often, he says. Paul really went to great lengths to preach the gospel and endured great suffering and great, great danger. So just keep that in mind as we go through this. So I believe Luke's account here in 27 can be divided up in three different sections. We'll first talk about the initial voyage from Caesarea, which is, of course, in Syria, in Palestine, to Crete, that island out there in the Mediterranean. And then from Crete to the open sea, you get west of Crete and there's just nothing out there. And again, Luke gives us a very vivid description of the sailing, the efforts being made. And then when they actually run the ship into the reef, into the ground, and the ship breaks apart and they're forced to scrounge for whatever they could float on and get to the island, which of course they did not know, Luke says, what it was, but it turned out to be Malta. So that's how we're going to go through this chapter tonight. So I've been, throughout the last two quarters, this quarter and last quarter, I like to find good maps that depict the story of Acts. And so I came across this one. And of the journeys, this of course is Paul's fourth journey in the book of Acts. The first three, there was a lot of teaching going on in those journeys, obviously, and Luke gave us detail where Paul went, who he talked to, and what he preached, and so forth and so on. And so we didn't spend the whole time on a map. But I'm just going to teach from the map tonight, because on this journey, there's not much teaching. It's just a chronicle, a diary, if you will, of the voyage. And we'll just note, this is one artist rendering of, here's the basic journey line. Of course, here's Malta, way over here, southwest of Sicily, which of course is southwest of Italy. And we don't know the exact route that Paul took. We don't have to know that, but this gives us a good general idea. So I took this map and I've divided it up into two blow-up sections. Let's first recognize the fact that if you just sailed straight or maybe flew on an airplane, it'd be about 1,150 miles from Caesarea, Jerusalem area here in Syria, over here to Malta. That's pretty long ways away. Again, I don't want to say medieval travel, but it was not like the travel that we have today. Man, it would take them quite a while to sail just on an open sea vessel, almost 1,200 miles. And they just didn't go straight. I mean, they went wherever the wind would take them. And so we need to be very appreciative of the fact that Paul went through all. So let's first look at this eastern part of the map. And we'll just go through the text and see where the Holy Spirit tells Luke to chronicle the journey. Of course, we're starting in Caesarea. And Luke writes in the opening verses, when it was decided that we should set sail for Italy, they proceeded to deliver Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort, or the battalion commander. His name was Julius. And embarking in an Adramyttean ship, an Adramyttean was way over here somewhere in Asia near Pergamum. You'll see that on a lot of Bible maps. So these ships would have berths, lots of places, of course. So they found this ship and would get them at least part of the way. And you'll see there in verse 2 again, it was about to set sail for the regions along the coast of Asia. That would be the west coast of Asia, right in here. So it's probably going back to its home berth, if you will, and put out to sea accompanied by Aristarchus. Where have we seen Aristarchus' name before? It says he was a Macedonian of Thessalonica. We've seen him before in Luke's record. If your Bible has references in like the center column, sometimes it'll be helpful. We can find his name two other places. In chapter 19, when you have that riot in Ephesus, remember the two brothers that got taken into the theater before Paul wanted to go in? Guess who one of them was? Aristarchus. And then in chapter 20, you have the list of Paul's traveling companions before it says that they broke bread at Troas on the first day of the week. He's listed in that group as well. So Aristarchus is with Paul, has been, as far as we can tell, since the events that took place there in Ephesus. So they're together. So Paul, or Luke says in verse 3, the next day we put out to Sidon, or put in at Sidon. And again, this would be the initial leg, verses 1 through 13. So Sidon's up here in the old Sidonian Phoenician region, Tyre and Sidon. Remember those cities from the Old Testament. So they went from Caesarea up to Sidon. And then Luke just writes, verse 4, from there we put out to sea and sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. So what does that mean? If we pretend these lines aren't here, how would they have used Cyprus as a shelter? Well, they would have sailed between Cyprus and the main coastline of Galatia and Cilicia. In fact, doesn't Luke say that in the next verse, verse 5? When we had sailed through the sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra in Lycia. So here's Lycia, and here's Myra, right, this city right here. So when they left Sidon, they used Cyprus as a buffer, if you will, because of all this open sea, obviously winds were coming up from that direction, and the island would have given them some relief and some protection. Now, what's unique, or maybe not unique, but maybe I should say familiar about this area in here, Pamphylia, and of course Saul's from Cilicia and Tarsus, but has Paul been there before? Yes. Remember his first journey? He spent some time in Pamphylia. Went from Pamphylia. In fact, who left him in Pamphylia? Him and Barnabas. John Mark left them. They were in Pamphylia, and Mark quit on them. So he's been in this area before. Now, they're not going to land. They're just sailing through the distance between Cyprus and the coast here. But he's been that way before. This is not unfamiliar to Paul. So Luke just says we're seeking protection from contrary winds. That's in verse 4. And verse 5, we sailed past Cilicia and Pamphylia and landed in Lycia. And now verse 6, and there the centurion, that is again would be Julius from back up in verse 1, he found an Alexandrian ship. So now we have a ship that's home birth is Alexandria down here in Egypt. And it's going to Italy. Why would it be going to Italy? Well, obviously, looking at, they found an Adramitian ship here. They found an Alexandrian ship here. High open sea sailing was the trade, and that's how merchant ships plied their trade. So I get the idea. In fact, let me jump ahead just for the moment. Drop down to verse 10 and 11, when they get and they have difficulty in Crete, especially verse 11, who had the authority on the ship? Was it the captain? It was Julius. It was the centurion. Obviously, he's in charge. He's an officer in the Roman army, and I guess when an officer of his rank boarded a ship, he must have had authority because he decided, no, I'm going to listen to the captain of the ship more than I'm going to listen to Paul, because Paul had said, we need to stay here, but they did not do that. So he finds the ship, and he said, all right, this is where we're going. So they stick Paul and Aristarchus and Luke and others who are with him on this ship that's bound for Italy. And so off they go from Myra, or Lycia, and they start out again, going westward. So we pick up now in verse 7. When we had sailed slowly for a good many days. Now, just pay attention to the descriptive language. We sailed slowly for a good many days, and with difficulty arrived off Cnidus. So let me get rid of some of my scribbling here. Cnidus is over here. And again, I'm no sailor. I don't have any nautical expertise. But if you just look at a map, and just a layman, I think, could see this. Once you get away from the inward waters of the Mediterranean that are maybe not as choppy and rough, and more out to the open sea off the coast here of Asia, then would we be surprised that Luke writes in verse 7 that there would be difficulty sailing? You get away from land, and you're just out there in the open. And the winds will take you wherever they want to take you. And that's just how that goes. So, again, Luke says we're going to have difficulty. We arrived off Cnidus, and the wind did not permit us to go further. So we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone or Salmone. So, again, so they are going to use an island for protection, because out here in the open, I would perceive would be more rough water. Now, the distance between Cyprus and this coast was not be as great as the distance between here, but perhaps they thought instead of being way out here in this area of the ocean, we're going to come down here and sail under the island, maybe get some more protection. That seems logical to me that they would think that. So they arrive at Salmone. I think that's how you say that. And then we get to verse 8 with difficulty. Again, Luke mentions difficulty. Sailing past it, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens. That would be right about in there. And which was near the city of Lasea. Or Lasea. Now, they stay there. And look what Luke says next in verse 9. And when considerable time had passed, we don't know how much time. I doubt it's a week. I mean, it may be months for all we know. It takes a long time to sail from Caesarea all the way over to Rome. He just says, by the Holy Spirit, considerable time had passed. And the voyage was now dangerous, if it wasn't dangerous before. And he says, it's now dangerous, since even the fast was already over. Now, do some versions not say the word fast in verse 9? Or do they all say fast? Okay. I got a marginal note in my Bible that says that's referring to the Day of Atonement, which is one of the high Jewish holidays. That would have been in September or October. So again, see, we're inching closer and closer to the later months of the year when, again, you didn't sail way out here in the open. You just didn't do that. And so that being the case, they have delayed for whatever reason. They have stayed many days now. Many days have elapsed on the island of Crete. So we look now at verse 9 and 10, the last part of verse 9. What does Paul say, basically? They've been on this island now for considerable time. It's into the very middle of or late of the fall months. And so what's Paul say?
We need to stay here.
We need to stay right here. Yes. This will not be good. We just need a winter right here. And that brings us to the point that I mentioned earlier. Well, the centurion obviously had authority on the ship, and he listens to Paul, but he listens to that. So I think the New King James says the helmsman or the captain and the pilot. And obviously they had a differing view. Now, I wasn't there to hear their conversation, and neither were you, but I could, in my mind, envision they were thinking maybe, well, now you're not we're the professional sailors. You're not, Paul. What do you know about this? We think we can get where? Where do they want to go? Verse 12. Phoenix, which is where? On the far western tip of the Isle of Crete. In fact, again, Luke, I'm just amazed with the detail Luke puts in this chapter. And because the harbor was not suitable for wintering, the majority reached a decision to put out to sea from there if somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, facing southwest and northwest. So it's on the very western tip of the island, and they said we can winter there. So something made them think that it was not suitable to winter here in Lasea. So if we just can skirt along the island here just a little bit more from here and make it over here to Phoenix, that's far better option to winter there. And so that's what we're going to try to do. So verse 13. When a moderate south wind came up. Again, my translation has a footnote there. Moderate says a south wind having gently blown. Nice, easy breeze. Nothing chaotic, nothing dangerous. If we just can skirt along the island here, maybe not go too far away from shore and make it to Phoenix, then we'll be really better off. So this light south wind comes up, and they began sailing along Crete close inshore. Is that how the New King James reads as well? Close to the shore? Who has a New King James? What's it say?
Close by Crete.
Close by Crete. Okay, so they're not getting very far off the shore is the point we're trying to make. So that gets us, here's the first leg of this journey. We go from Caesarea, all this, using Cyprus as a buffer, using Crete as a buffer, and the point is to get to Phoenix, which is on the Isle of Crete. And basically, what's the last landmass they're going to come across on this trip to Rome? What's going to be Crete? I mean, they are as far west as they're going to get before they hit land again. Past here, and this will show the next side of the map here, past Crete, there's nothing. So that's why they wanted to winter there. So this gets us now, the middle section will be verses 14 through 29. This is the dangerous sailing out in the open sea. First word of verse 14. Despite this gentle breeze that came up, this moderate south wind in verse 13, but. Now, yours may say mine has the word a euroquillo. The New King James has a, I probably can't even pronounce that word. I read it this morning. Yes. It's a nor'easter. You ever heard of a nor'easter before? What's a nor'easter or a northeaster? Just not in Bible terms, but just in. Comes out of the north. The New King James says in verse 14, what's the word? A euroclidon? Euroquillo or a nor'easter? I looked this up. I want to make sure I had this right. Just, and again, this isn't a Bible definition. This is just a definition of a nor'easter. It's hurricane force winds from the northeast. Comes out. Nor'easter, obviously. It can cause flooding, coastal erosion. It's when cold air mixes with warm water. And that's just a recipe for disaster. So Luke says, before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called a nor'easter. And when the ship was caught in it and could not face the wind, what'd they have to do? Now they're forced to do what? Just let it go. It's going to take us wherever we go. Hoist the sail and go. Blow with it. Let ourselves be driven along. And so running under the shelter of a small island called Clauda. This map doesn't show, I mean, there's the word, but it doesn't show a little land mass. But Clauda is out here, I assume somewhere off the southwest tip of Crete. So they try to go under that. So they always were looking for ways to use land masses as buffers, just to, for protection, for easier sailing. But again, once they clear this area right here, there's nothing out here. They're just out there, and they're going to go where the Lord in his winds blow them. That's just how it's going to go. Let me erase that mess. So, verse 16. We were scarcely able to get the ship's boat under control. After they had hoisted it up, they used supporting cables to undergird the ship. So how they got those under the boat, it's beyond me. But they were trying to gird the ship up with cables. I assume they'd be iron cables. They would latch them on the sides of the boat to keep the ship together. And fearing that they might run aground on the shallows of Syrtis, they let down the sea anchor. And so they let themselves be driven along. And the next day, verse 18, we were being violently storm-tossed. And again, I want you to pay attention when you read this. And if you teach this next quarter, get these adverbs and adjectives in the story because Luke puts them in there for emphasis. Violently being tossed around. They began to jettison the cargo. Obviously, the ship's too heavy. We've got to lighten the load. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. Now, what's the... It gets more desperate. What's verse 20 say?
No sun, no stars.
Now, why is that important to a sailor? It had no compass. I mean, you used the stars. You used the sun, maybe the moon on a clear night. You used that for guidance. That's how they sailed. Well, with this storm, I mean, you're just in fog. And you don't know where you are. You don't know where you're going. So let me ask the obvious question. How would you have liked to have been on the ship traveling that way? No, thank you. I mean, nowadays we have GPSs, we have smart devices with apps and all. I mean, our travel is so much easier. And here Paul is, he's made an appeal to the emperor. And again, the Lord had told him, Paul, you're going to go to Rome. He didn't say how you're going to get there, but he said, you're going to go to Rome. And this is the event that the Lord chose to get Paul from where he was to his work in the capital of the empire. I want us to be appreciative as best we can of this lay of the journey. So, yeah, okay. Yes, sir, go ahead.
I got stuck in a boat out in the sea, like 2 miles off the shore, about 20 years ago, and it was the most terrified I've ever been. And I could see land.
And did you have a motor on your boat?
No, it was a sailboat.
It was a sailboat, actual sailboat. Well, I'm sure that's how she felt. And remember now, these are professional sailors. I mean, this is what they do. And this ship has been built, I would assume, been built to handle voyages on the high sea. But when something like this comes along, I mean, who wins, nature or man? Nature is very powerful, extremely powerful. So here they are in the middle of all this. So neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm, Luke says. That means what? It's a big one. No small storm was assailing us. And from then on, what does Luke conclude? Nobody has hope. We're going to die. Just like David said, we're going to die. We're going to meet the Lord out here on the ocean. It's just not going to work any other way. So all hope of being saved was gradually abandoned. So they go a long time without food. Verse 21, I need to pick up my pace here a little bit. And Paul in their midst, in this hopeless situation. And what's Paul basically say? Now he says two things. And number one, I don't think Paul's being a smart aleck. That wasn't Paul's nature. He was just being honest. What did he say? You should have listened to me. If we had wintered back there on Crete, we wouldn't be in this mess right now. But doesn't do any good to talk about what ifs. So the most important thing he says is what? There'll be no death. We might lose the ship, but no one's going to die. And how did Paul know that? What's he say? How does he describe how he learned this? An angel told him, right? And am I jumping ahead here? Verse 23, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve. That's interesting. We belong, when we obey the gospel, we belong to God. Bought at a price. Paul has already written. I belong to God. This God that I belong to, he has told me through his heavenly servant and angel, there'll be no loss of life. We could lose the ship, if you will. In fact, he says in verse 22, we'll lose the ship. So don't be afraid. Verse 24, to Paul, you must stand before Caesar, and God has granted you all those who are sitting with you. They're going to be all right. So he says, gird up your courage. Now, I don't want to be too dramatic, but here in the middle of all this storm, here's Paul saying, now, all right, men, let's hunker down here and let's all have courage. And if you're one who's given up hope, how would you receive that typically? Right. Because we're not professional sailors. How many's on board? We learn later. Verse 37. 276 people. Paul says, let's be of good courage. For I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. If you believe God, then things will turn out like he's told us. That's a lesson for us. Even in something this dramatic, if you will. But we must run aground on a certain island. I don't say that's prophesying, but he's already saying, we're going to run aground, which they did. Now, verse 27, how long has it been? We get to this verse. It's been 14 nights has come. 2 weeks. Imagine that, just on this boat doing the same thing for two straight weeks. 14 nights being driven about in the Adriatic Sea. About midnight, the sailors began to surmise we were approaching land. So they're the professionals. So what did they start to do? That Luke says. They took soundings. What was that about? Yeah, how deep it is. And so they took a sounding, and it was, 20 fathoms. I should have done my research. How deep is a fathom? I don't know. 6 feet? Whatever it is. I'm not a sailor. So 20 fathoms. So they go a little while longer, and then they take a sounding, and it's what? 15. So what's that tell us? Well, we're getting in shallower water. So they were correct. We surmise we're getting close to land, and so the soundings proved that. So verse 29, fearing that we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast four anchors from the stern and wished for daybreak. So let's just stay here, and when we can see better, it's at night, and we'll be able to navigate this a little bit better. Well, there was a problem that came up. What happened? So they dropped those anchors and they're not moving a whole lot. Who got what bright idea? Sailor said what? You know what? We're going to get off this boat. We're going to get out of this mess. And Paul sees that. And what's Paul do? He tells a centurion what? Basically. If you let those men go, I like how Paul, if they go, you won't be saved. He made it personal to the centurion. Is that what he says? Verse Verse 31, unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. And so the centurion says, cut those boats loose. Lifeboats, skiffs, some versions say. Cut them loose. That we're stuck. I mean, talk about burning your boats. They cut those. You're on the ship. I mean, you're not going anywhere. So when day was about to dawn, verse 33, the next several verses, what does Paul do? We need to eat. Been 2 weeks that you've gone without food. A person can last 2 weeks without food. Verse 34, therefore I encourage you to take some food, for this is for your preservation. For not a hair from the head of any of you shall perish. And having said this, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of all. So Paul shows how to be thankful in the midst of a very chaotic situation. And blesses the bread, gives thanks for it, and makes distribution, if you will. And he begins to eat. And in verse 36, all of them were encouraged. And they themselves took food. And so everyone on the boat ate. And I get the idea that they ate till they were full. Verse 38. So then what would they do after that? We had enough. Start throwing it overboard. They had wheat. They had other perishable items. Maybe some non-perishable items. We need to lighten the load of this ship and throw it overboard. So they did all this jettisoning of cargo, if you will. Verse 39, the day came, but they did not recognize the land. Of course, what is it? Well, it's Malta, this island out here. And they did observe a certain bay with a beach. So they must not have been too far away. They could see it. So they had the idea, we need to do what? With this ship. Let's just run it right into that beach or into that bay. And that's how we'll be able to get off the boat. Did they make to the beach? They didn't make it. So as Luke concludes this narrative, if you will, that's verse 39. They resolved to drive the ship into the bay. They cast off the anchors, let them left just drop in the sea. They were loosening the ropes of the rudders and hoisting the sail. Let's let the wind drive us into the beach, if you will. But they struck a reef, verse 41, where two seas meet. And they ran the vessel aground, and the prow stuck fast, but the stern began to be broken up by the boisterous winds and the waves. So what's the ship doing? It's starting to splinter apart. Well, if you're one of these Roman soldiers, what's first thought in your mind? This was their duty. Kill the prisoners. We cannot have them escape. We're honor bound to either get them to Rome, or if we can't get there, then they're going to die. We'll execute them. But that didn't happen because why? Paul was in good favor with Julius the centurion, and he wanted to get Paul to Rome. So he said, all right, no prisoners die. Well, the ship's breaking apart, and so if you could swim, jump, and swim ashore. What if you couldn't swim? Whatever you can find, a piece of the ship, a plank, a board, something, latch on to it, and you're desperate, you're gonna hang on. Some folks can swim pretty good and some folks can't. They're out there in the ocean. And so they make it to land, if you will, and the chapter concludes, you'll see there. The rest should follow, some on planks, others on various things from the ship, and thus it happened that they were all brought safely to land. Go back to verse 24. What had the angel told Paul? All who are with you will make it. Did all make it? All made it, just like God said. So maybe that's what we can teach the children in a lesson like this, is that if God says something, even when it looks extremely doubtful, when it doesn't make sense to human reasoning, if God said it, what should be our mindset? It's going to work. How's it going to work? I haven't got the foggiest idea. I just don't know. We'll have to let time run its course. We'll have to just let things play themselves out. And you know what? It might not be pleasant. There may be some good parts to this. There might be some bad parts to this. But we're going to let God's will run its course. And that's what happened. So, the Lord willing, on this coming Sunday morning, we'll finish our quarter with the last chapter in Acts. And there will be some teaching in that chapter, so we won't stick mainly with a map, but we'll spend most of our time on the map. But I do appreciate your attendance and your comments tonight, so look forward to seeing you this coming Sunday to end our studies together. Thank you for coming tonight.